NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
What's up, my dudes?
Welcome back.
This is Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Les.
And today, this story is really fucked up. In all seriousness, this one's really fucked up. It's rough. I don't say that lightly. So we'll just dive right in, I think. We don't have any updates, right, on anything? I feel like so many things have been happening lately.
It's almost Halloween.
Ah, yes. Spooky time. It's pre-October.
We might have another fun episode for you this year. Depending
Oh, yeah.
On the state of things.
Yeah, I would really like to do another Halloween episode. I don't know what yet. We'll discuss after this, probably.
Or Patreon could help.
Yeah, Patreon could help. That would be good.
Depending on how many votes we get and stuff.
Yeah. We'll come up with some ideas and throw them on there. We can also run a poll on Instagram as well.
Yes.
Might not be a bad idea, so we can get one up for Patreon.
Yes.
And one up on the reg. So yeah. I don't think we have any case updates though. Nope. Also, though, I read something the other day about the government finally fucking investigating all the shit going on at Fort Hood.
Really?
Yeah. Like, 80 people have died there in the last year. 80
Why?
Soldiers.
Where's Fort Hood?
It's in Texas.
Didn't they have, an area that was just, piled with bones?
I don't know. I didn't read the article that much.
I heard that in a unreliable news source, so... Mm.
Yeah, no. So they're finally doing some investigation after 86 fucking soldiers have died there. And I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable. Sorry.
Yeah. That's our... shield at this point.
Mostly soldiers of color and mostly people who reported sexual misconduct to their higher ups.
Mm.
So
shocker.
What are some of the biggest problems?
Why is it so shitty here on our world?
It's terrible, but hopefully we get some answers about it, because honestly it's super fucked up. Especially we're talking fucking service people giving up their life for this shit. Ugh, it just pisses me off.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. Diving into today's episode, then. Today's episode deals with disturbing situations like child abuse and neglect, sexual abuse, the death of children, and more. This is a deeply disturbing case, and I don't say that lightly. So please do what you need to do to take care of yourself, even if that means you skip this episode. Again, this is rough. It's gross. It's horrifying. So, there's that. In 1993, a young woman by the name of Terry Knorr frantically called the Utah police. She claimed she had information on a strange murder that had gone unsolved for the past 10 years. Hmm. Little did police know, this case was about to get so much larger and more disturbing than they ever could have imagined. Today we're discussing the disgusting abuse and murders that happen at the hands of human garbage, Teresa Knorr.
Damn it.
Yeah, she really sucks, you guys.
Yeah. Oh God.
We've recorded this before, but had to scrap it, so they know some of this.
I don't remember all of it. Much, I think I blocked it
but
out.
I do remember she sucks.
Yeah.
No, she's really fucking terrible. So, before we get into that, I'm gonna give you some background on her. Teresa Knorr was born in March 1946 in Sacramento, California, to Jim and Swanee Cross. Interesting name.
Swanee
Cross.
Yeah.
You sound like you're either some really important character or just kind of weird with that last name.
Right?
But I kind of like it.
I like it too.
Very
like
goth
it.
Of you.
Very goth.
Super goth. According to those who knew the family, Knorr's father began to suffer from Parkinson's as he got older and couldn't work anymore after an unsuccessful brain surgery to repair the Parkinson's.
Mm.
This caused him to spiral into a depression, and he began to take those frustrations out on his wife and child. And those close to the family say there was abuse in the home. Teresa was reportedly very close to her mother, but she was incredibly upset when she died in 1961. Throughout Teresa's life, she would have four marriages, none of which were successful. Her first husband was 21-year-old Clifford Sanders, and they met when Teresa was just 16 years old. They married in 1962.
How old is this man?
21.
Okay.
That's kind of sketch.
It's weird. Why would you marry a 16-year-old?
No.
The don't. Fuck?
No.
Stop.
Also, like, a year after her mom died, so, like...
Yeah. Sounds a little bit like you're taking advantage of her, bud.
You know, I agree. I feel bad for child her. And then we get to the adult shit, and I'm like,
Well, and how often do we hear those, like, cases of, like... the way that your parents' relationship was kind of reflects onto your relationship as an adult because you seek those things out.
Yes.
Unconsciously. So I'm like, that really sucks because that's her trauma. It's trauma related.
Absolutely. And then, like, I have some empathy for that. And also there's no fucking excuse for what this woman did to her children. So I just have to remind people, like, yes, you're going to feel sympathy for this woman for a little bit of this. And then you're going to be like, why the fuck did I feel that way?
People are goblins.
Yeah, like, all of us has got their trauma. None of it is an excuse to do that.
No.
Not every traumatized person is going to turn to violence.
Yeah.
Exactly. So upon marrying Sanders, Teresa dropped out of school and became pregnant with her first child, a son named Howard Sanders, who was born in 1963. Those close to the family say that Teresa was a jealous and possessive person, often accusing Sanders of cheating, even though this was not the case. Teresa was also physically abused by Sanders on at least one instance, but chose not to press charges.
Okay.
Things began escalating to the next level in 1964, when Sanders came home from spending his birthday with his friends instead of at home. The couple argued, and Sanders told Noor that he was leaving her. She responded by shooting him in the back with a rifle, killing him.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God. The
escalation
there.
Very quick.
Very, very quick.
Noor was arrested and charged, but claimed that she was not guilty because she was acting in self-defense as Sanders was physically abusive to her.
How do you...
self-defensively shoot someone in the back.
Yeah.
Right. Sanders' relatives did not believe this. And at the trial, his sister even said, quote, "I believe with all my heart that Teresa Sanders planned to kill my brother," end quote. During the trial, Teresa was pregnant with her second child, Sheila. Teresa was acquitted of the murder on September 22nd, 1964. So, yeah, she was acquitted on the grounds of self-defense.
Wow. Really unfortunate for that family.
Yes. Yeah, and his family was, like, not fucking happy at all about it. After the birth of Sheila, Teresa began to drink more heavily. The drinking took place at local bars where she'd meet men. One night, she met Estelle Thornsberry. Dope name.
Estelle Thornsberry. That's Estelle.
Thornsberry.
You sound like an adventurer, and I love it.
I love it so much. And she moved in with him, like, pretty quickly.
Oh, it's a guy's name, Estelle?
Yeah.
Wow.
Thornsberry soon learned what a nightmare she was. She'd leave her children with him when she went out partying and drinking, and would even stay out for multiple days without returning to check on her kids.
Okay, cool. Fuck you.
Right, with this, like, strange man. Like, you barely know this guy. Yeah.
He's like, all right, but fuck.
Yeah, he's like, I mean, I had shit to do, but I guess.
What an asshole.
Yeah. Soon, Thornsberry had enough, and the final straw was Teresa sleeping with his best friend.
Wow.
What the hell, dude?
Yeah.
This guy even sounds like semi-normal.
Yeah. And he's just like, what are you doing, man? Can you stop? And she's like, no.
Worse.
More.
Fuck your friends.
More.
Yeah, it's like Kylo Ren meme. Once this relationship ended, Teresa met husband number two in 1966. Robert Noor was a U.S. Marine, and soon after the relationship began, Teresa and Bob, as he was known to his friends and family, married, and Teresa became pregnant again. The pair would go on to have four children in total.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Lots of kids. So many kids.
So, like, Jesus, what's their total now?
So she had three before this.
And she just had four more, so she's got seven kids.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And that's it. She only has seven children.
One of them.
That's a lot of kids.
Oh, yeah. So she had Susan in 1966, William in 1967, Robert in 1968, and Teresa, or Terry, as she'd go by later, in 1970. Just like every other relationship Teresa had been in, Robert and Teresa's marriage was riddled with arguments, hostility, and alcoholism. Once again, Teresa began to make accusations of infidelity against Bob, and because of this, Robert and Teresa divorce in 1969. When Robert attempts to see his kids, Teresa blocks him. Like, does not allow him to be involved at all.
That's fucked up.
Why? You need money to watch the kids and to watch your kids for real.
Right, and like, you kind of suck at mothering, so like, I don't know. Give someone else a shot.
Secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and also it's like the 70s, so it's still a very like super like mom is the only one. Oh, God, clearly Christ. Not. Teresa would have two more unsuccessful marriages.
Jesus Christ.
One in 19. This woman. I know. That's the thing, is like, why do you keep getting married? Just stop.
She's unhealthy. She's like, I've had 17 marriages prior. Does that bother you?
Is it cool that I've been married to like 12 people? Great. One in 1971 to Ron Putnam. This marriage fell apart in less than a year after Teresa began leaving her kids with him to go party. Same pattern. He got tired of it pretty quickly and was like, fuck this. I want a divorce. Good for you, guy. You fucking dodged a bullet. The next marriage only lasted 2 months before it fell apart.
Why did you get married?
Teresa married Chet Harris in August of 1976. Harris was very close to Susan, her daughter, and because Teresa was jealous of the normal attention her daughter was receiving from him, like, he wasn't being weird or anything. It wasn't like he was creeping on her. He was just like, oh, this is like my stepkid. I guess I should pay attention to you.
Yeah.
And also, he was like a photographer, like, in as a hobby. He liked to take pictures of nude women that were like consenting to it.
Yeah.
And she was like, nah, fuck this. Fuck you. Got a divorce 2 months in. It's like, why did you not know that about that person? Yeah. Don't marry people you just met. Don't do
it's
it.
It's not safe.
It's not safe. It's fucking weird. So after that divorce, things start to get super crazy. So here's your second warning.
Because it does get pretty rough.
Yeah,
it does.
If you need to leave, leave now.
Or if you're, like, already in a bad mood.
Right.
Yeah, this will just make it worse.
Blood boiling.
Yeah.
Promise.
So Teresa's children lived in fear of their mother. She used a variety of abusive and downright torturous tactics to keep her children, quote, in line. You gotta chill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the laughter is because I'm uncomfortable. I just have to keep saying that because there's so much uncomfortable stuff in this.
Yeah.
These included force-feeding the girls to make them, quote, fat and unattractive.
Okay, first of all, fuck you.
Yeah.
How many girls do you know did she have out of those? Did we say seven?
Three.
Eight? Oh.
Three girls, four boys.
She said seven, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Three girls, four boys. It's disgusting.
Yeah. So there was that, beating them, throwing knives at them, burning them with cigarettes, like lit cigarettes.
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah. She even made her other children participate, mostly the boys, forcing them to hold down their siblings while she beat and burned them. Most of this abuse was directed at her eldest girls, Susan and Sheila. Her youngest daughter, Terry, believed this was because Susan and Sheila were becoming beautiful young adult women, and Teresa was getting old and gross from drinking so much. So again, we see that, like, jealousy play out, and this, like, brought up an interesting thing for me mental health-wise.
Yeah.
Around, like, histrionic personality disorder.
What is that?
So it's, like, hypersexualization. Someone who has to be the center of sexual attention at all times. They have sex with many partners for validation. Like, I don't know how else to describe. Do you have more to add to that?
No, that's the best description I can possibly give right now.
I feel like that's the best gist. And usually it's like unstable, unhealthy relationships.
Different from sex addiction?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this isn't like...
It's a personality disorder.
Oh.
Yeah. I feel like people sometimes like to go with that and be like, oh, it just means that you're a slut. No, it's like an actual thing.
Yeah.
It sounds more...
It's an actual mental health thing.
Individual. Yeah. Oh, wow. And it's, I mean, typically diagnosed in women, which could be because women experience it more, or it could be misogyny. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, I mean, You can Google the DSM criteria if you really want to know the specifics of it. I'm not going to go into all that because I don't want to go get the book. But, yeah. So, I was kind of curious if maybe that was something she was experiencing.
That is something interesting that you bring up. Would there be anything with that tied to, like, specifically how she treats her daughters? Is it just, like... Is the jealousy the main part of that?
Yeah. Okay. I would argue that the jealousy is the driving force in her abuse against her children.
Whoa.
Okay.
Which even is fucked sons? Up. So she doesn't abuse her sons to the same extent.
That's, I remember. Okay.
Yeah. Most of it, like, they did get beat. Like, when you see interviews and stuff, like, they did get beat, but they did a lot more of holding their sisters down and, like, helping their mother, which we will get into very deeply later. But yeah. So after the divorce between Harris and Noor, Teresa began to spiral. She was drinking even more. She had gained a lot of weight because alcohol will make you gain weight. She hardly ever left the house and escalated her abuse against her children. She uprooted her family from their home in a smaller town in California to a 2-bedroom in big city Sacramento. At this point, Teresa's oldest son had moved out, but still 6 kids sharing a room.
Jesus, 1 room?
Yeah, 2-bedroom apartment. She moved into a 2-bedroom apartment.
How is that even legal?
Right.
Don't they check, like, don't you have to live, like, mark the number of occupants?
Yeah, but they don't really check that.
They don't give a shit?
No. Like, go door to door.
No, they don't really.
You think they would do that to, like, make sure that you're
paying enough, like, money.
Yeah, paying enough money and have enough space to actually house all those people.
Right, like fire.
So code sad. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure she gets her own room.
Yeah, she did.
Oh my God.
This is actually when the behavior gets worse. Teresa didn't let her children leave the home, not even for school. Like, she pulled them out of school. And the neighbors noticed that the home smelled like urine and that the kids always seemed afraid. And none of the children had more than a middle school education.
That is abuse in itself. No.
Yeah, it's neglect. Yeah.
Well, and, like, the sucky part is, I know that if you're in one of these situations and you're a child, even if you miss that much school, like, they're supposed to call your house and, like, check on you, but they don't.
This was also the 70s.
Yeah. So it's even before that.
God.
Yeah. They don't actually follow up on those things. So nobody would have even noticed if they had been in school.
Exactly. So. And, like, your apartment reeks of urine so bad that your neighbors can tell.
Why is there urine everywhere?
Do you not have a bathroom? What's going on?
I think it's, like, probably animal pee, but it didn't specify, so I don't know. I don't know because
I would hope, like, so.
That level of neglect does translate to the kids also, and they might pee where they want to.
Yeah, true. So I don't really know why it smelled like pee, but... I would definitely be calling fucking something, you know, CPS. Fucking, can someone check on these kids, man?
The neighbors obviously could tell what's going on.
That's what I'm saying.
Was this a lack of bystander intervention?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. If someone
were just like, oh, someone else will call, so I don't have to.
I think if someone had called, these two girls would have survived.
God damn it.
But who knows? The system's fucked, too, so.
Yeah.
Teresa was convinced that Susan had been turned into a witch by Harris. Yeah.
How old is she?
Susan or Teresa?
Susan.
Susan is, like, a teenager at this point. I don't have specific.
Why would she think she was turned into a witch?
I think she's delusional by this point, because why would you think
that's part of the jealousy thing too, like, I mean, she's out to get me,
it could be.
Absolutely. So crazy, it sounds like.
Yes, that level
terrifying to live with someone like that, right? When she's like, don't look at me, you're a witch, and you're just sitting there like, I don't know, mom.
Well, exactly, that's what she's saying. So, like, she believed that Susan was casting spells to make her fat.
that's on you.
It's like, babe stop drinking. Stop drinking.
Totally jealousy thing. What the fuck? Delusional.
She's very, very delusional.
Because of this belief, she received the brunt of the abuse from her mother. Until she Sorry, until she died in 1984. One time, Teresa had beaten Susan, and Susan decided to run. She ended up in the psych ward after being picked up by police, and she told workers the horrible stories of abuse that she was enduring at the hands of her mother. Police did not investigate these claims any further, as Teresa had told them that Susan had mental health problems and liked to make things up.
Of course.
So, yet again, another person who could have intervened. Another group of people who could have intervened, honestly.
See how little respect children get.
Yeah. Yes. And she's almost grown at this point. Like, by the time we get near, like, that happened when she was 15.
All right.
Yeah. Teresa began handcuffing Susan to the bed and forcing the other children to stand over her and watch her to ensure that she wouldn't leave again.
Invasion of privacy to further demoralize.
Yep.
Awful.
And restraint. Holy shit. Sometime in 1982, Teresa and Susan got into the argument about the witch thing again. When Susan tried to deny this, like, what the fuck are you talking about, lady? Like, I'm just existing over here. Teresa shot her in the chest.
Oh, my God.
And
oh
left her to bleed out in a bathtub. She survived.
What?
No.
What the fuck, dude? Guns? You shoot your kid, dude? How did she survive? She couldn't go to the hospital.
The what? Bullet got lodged in her back.
Oh. Oh, no.
Teresa refused her medical treatment. And she and Sheila and Terry nursed her back to health.
Dude, like, my back hurts just thinking about it. What the fuck? Why were you allowed to have kids? This is just like a torture chamber for these kids. Like, they don't have anyone.
Nope.
And they're not allowed to leave, so they're so isolated.
Like, nobody knows what they're going through on the daily. Like, their mom doesn't work. She's just collecting welfare.
I don't know if it's welfare or, like, disability or I don't know. I don't know what is happening here financially. Oh, actually, I do. We'll get there, too. We'll get there, too. In 1984, Susan decided enough was enough, and she told her mother she was running away to Alaska. Teresa agreed to let her leave under one condition. She wanted to dig the lodged bullet out of Susan's back so that she couldn't report the shooting to authorities.
Don't trust her.
Not a good idea, Teresa. Oh my God. Why don't you just kill her? Like, why are you putting her through all of this torture?
Yeah, this is torture. At this point, you are far beyond neglecting your child.
It's
so
sick. Her mind. Like, even to just be around that. Poor things, dude.
Fucking gross, dude. Susan agreed because she desperately wanted out of this situation. So she was like, fine. That's fine. Teresa gave Susan a mixture of alcohol and pills used to treat psychosis as an anesthetic, which that's not an anesthetic.
That doesn't work like that.
No. Like, maybe the booze, but not the fucking antipsychotics.
Has she been taking any of her medication?
Clearly not. I'm going to go with not.
Why? No.
Once Susan passed out, Teresa ordered Robert to extract the bullet from Susan's back. He was 15 at the time.
Oh, so much trauma. God. So much trauma.
Too much trauma.
The bullet was removed, but because of the dirty conditions, Susan ended up sick of sepsis over the course of days.
That makes sense.
Instead of leaving Susan at a hospital.
I'm so sorry for her.
I know. Instead of leaving her at a hospital, Teresa decided she was sick of nursing Susan's health. She bound her arms and legs and had her sons stuff Susan and all of her belongings in the car. They drove to a less populated area, put Susan and her belongings on the side of the road before Teresa covered Susan and her things in gasoline. She then lit the pile ablaze. Upon discovery the next day, Susan's body was still on fire. When authorities conducted an autopsy, they found that Susan was still alive when she was set on fire.
No!
At this time, this case would go down as unsolved and unable to identify the body of Susan Knorr. Her body was labeled as Jane Doe number 4873. Susan was 17 years old at the time of her death.
I hate people so much. I hate bad parenting so much.
That's like, neglectful
psychopathy. Yeah,
that is torture.
This is fucking scary, and like, because your kids are becoming people who are like adults and attractive. Like, really?
People don't want to let, because it'll also mean that she's losing control.
Yep.
She's going to lose control of one of her little toys.
Exactly.
Which is fucked up.
Yeah, those kids never had an identity. Like, they were never given the time of day. Nobody even knows how to identify her body. Like, they don't even know she's missing. Like, the world couldn't have cared less if this was the fate of that kid.
Yeah. Y'all, children aren't pets. I don't know how, like, I have to bring this back up with, like, fucking Candace thing. Children aren't pets, whether, regardless if you adopt them or you give birth to them.
Right.
They're human beings.
There's no law in place that says this person is not fit to be a child, like a parent. They could just
then you get into the ethics of like determining who is fit to be a parent.
Seven kids
and how that can be manipulated.
Yeah, but if
divorces, you know,
if you manipulate that in a certain way, it's eugenics.
Yeah, like it's true. I get it, but
I understand what you're saying, though. Yeah,
it's rough because you know that you'd be able to like help these situations and prevent them from occurring, possibly, not for sure.
No, I mean, yeah, I guess you're right. It's more
and then you
on
run into
the
eugenics.
Responsibility of society at that point. Like, you see this parent not doing well.
Right.
And all these kids in a miserable freaking place. Like, did they even leave their house to go to the store?
No.
They don't have any identity in the world.
We'll talk about this a little later, but the only reason any of them were allowed to leave the house was for sex work reasons, to make money for the family.
Did I mention I hate her?
Yeah, she's pretty fucking terrible. Okay, jumping back into this terrible story. Okay, after Susan's death, Teresa turned her aggression towards her other daughter, Sheila. This included all the abuse I had mentioned earlier, but there's more. Teresa forced Sheila into sex work because she didn't want to work, and the money Teresa was earning from the state wasn't enough. There's your answer. At the beginning of this, Sheila was making good amounts of money and was afforded more privileges than the other children because of it. Soon, Teresa would begin making more things up, like she did with Susan. She argued with Sheila, claimed that Sheila was pregnant and had an STI. Teresa also claimed that she contracted the same STI from Sheila from a toilet seat, which is not fucking possible.
First of all, that's not possible, and also, why are you getting mad at her for this something when you forced her into sex work?
Right. Or like,
you can't get mad at her.
If you were diagnosed with an STI, could it be because of the people that you are sleeping with and then you are not taking care of yourself?
She probably doesn't even have an STI, doesn't know the difference between a yeast infection and a fucking STI.
Again, you can't get an STI from a toilet seat.
No.
It's a rumor. That's not fucking possible. Stop spreading misinformation. This is why we need comprehensive sex ed. Because you people don't know shit like this. Sheila denied this, obviously. Again, the denial of the bullshit Teresa had made up in her head led to murder. As a result of this argument, Teresa beat her, bound her arms and legs before locking her in a closet. The closet was hot with no ventilation.
Oh my God.
Teresa didn't give Sheila food or water and didn't allow the other children either. She didn't even allow the door in the closet to be opened.
What the fuck?
Terry, the younger sister, tried to open the door and give Sheila the only thing that was available to drink in the house, which was beer.
Oh my God, dude. What the fuck? Fucking psychopath.
Sheila attempted to give in to her mother, claimed that her mother was right and that she had gotten an STI and she was pregnant. Teresa no longer believed her and left her in the closet to die.
What the fuck?
Less than a year after Susan's death, Sheila died in June of 1985. She was locked in the closet alive for 3 days.
Oh my God, dude.
On June 21st, Sheila passed away of starvation and dehydration, but Teresa and her family wouldn't discover Sheila's body for another 3 days.
They really gave no fucks about her.
Yeah.
None.
How did they, like, wait, y'all are so disgusting. They did find the body?
No, the family found the body.
So this is just not getting any sort of police attention.
No, not at all. There's no one to report anyone missing.
What did they do with the body?
I'll tell you. Because of how hot the closet was, the decomposition was sped up a lot. And they had only opened the closet because of the smell of rotting that was coming from it.
They didn't even fucking remember.
Again, Teresa had her two sons dispose of Sheila's body, and this time they left the body in a cardboard box at a nearby airport. Sheila's body was found hours after being dropped off, but it was so badly decomposed that authorities were unable to identify her. She was labeled as Jane Doe number 6607.
Why?
This, like, hurts worse than almost all the cases we've covered, because it's, like, the trust and care of someone for these kids. There's, like, nothing to save them.
Yeah. Like, it feels almost like you know that something's going to happen. It just feels like doom. And I feel like it also feels that way because it's so real. And this is, like, it just happens to lesser extents all the time.
Yeah.
And people don't take it seriously.
Or even in similar situations. I mean, look at the fucking Gabriel Fernandez case. It's the same shit. Mm-hmm. And it's fucking, what, the 30, 40 years later? And we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's not fucking working. No. So, like, we need to do better.
Yes. How? You know, like, what is it that we do as a community? But also, with this woman, I was going to ask something. What she's doing to make the other kids help is so bad. Could you imagine?
It's to manipulate. That's all it is like, oh, well, if you don't do what I say, then I'll tell the police that you did this.
She just likes to fill these kids' lives with hatred and like.
Well, I imagine her forcing them into sex work also is like, I'll report you to the police for doing sex work.
Another manipulative. Jail
might have been better than that place. Shoot.
No, honestly. Seriously. Yeah. Let's see here. The smell continued to permeate the apartment that the remaining family members shared. This made Teresa paranoid that she'd be got, and she decided that they needed to get out of town. She ordered Terry, the only daughter left, to burn down the apartment. Terry tried to, but the fire didn't do much because it was quickly caught by neighbors because you live in a fucking apartment building. The fire did nothing to the closet where Sheila had spent her last days. By the time of the move, all remaining children except Terry and Robert left their mother's, quote, care. Terry left at the first chance she got, using Sheila's ID to move through the world as an adult.
What? Like, fuck this bitch, she's dead, I'm gonna use her shit.
Well, fuck, if it means you're getting out of there, hell yeah.
Oh, okay, good. I was misunderstanding.
No. Yeah, no, not the mom. The other daughter was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And stole, took the ID, which, like, good for you, girl.
Yeah.
Robert stayed with his mother as they went to Vegas. In 1991, Robert attempted to rob a bar and shot the bartender, killing him. He was given 16 years in prison, and after this happened, Teresa relocated to Utah alone.
That fucking learned violence.
Mm-hmm. After escaping her terrible mother, Terry told her therapist, a lawyer, and the police about what had happened to her sisters. Every single one of these people dismissed her.
Why? Is it because you think she's still a child?
They believed her stories to be fake.
What the fuck? Why? Could you imagine? After all that, and, like, surviving to sit in front of someone else who's supposed to help you and be told no.
Well, when you report abuse, they don't want to take it seriously.
Yep. Is it the age thing? Like, can they
at that point, she was pretending to be an adult, right?
Yeah. Yeah. People thought she was an adult at this point.
Dude.
Just, like, regardless of age, we tend to ignore those things.
Yep. Because and she even says, like, I saw some interviews or whatever of, like, she's like, I can't necessarily blame them because it sounds crazy, like, what I'm saying sounds crazy, and also it's not, like, this actually happened to me. It just pisses me off because, like, a psychiatrist or a therapist, a lawyer, and the police, all of you,
none of you wanted to even, like, make note of that.
Yet you have so many fucking Jane Does.
Right.
Like, you can't open yourself to the possibility
that could be true. And she's even like, I know where these people were taken. Like, I know where they put their bodies.
Oh, no. My God.
Terry had been trying to report the murders to various people since 1989. It wasn't until 1993 that someone what took her fuck? Seriously. Which really makes me mad. It really makes me mad.
So she's constantly trying to go to people and they won't take her seriously.
Yep. Guess what does? America's Most Wanted.
Oh, of course.
John Walsh coming in, being a fucking hero like always. Fucking love John Walsh. In 1993, she called the America's Most Wanted tip line. She said, like, as she was telling her story, she said, quote, "What kind of mother does that? What kind of person am I going to be for the rest of my life because of this?" End
that
quote.
That makes me so fucking sad. Why do I feel that?
Well, in the survivor's guilt that she must feel. And she does discuss that. I'm not pulling that out of my ass. Like, she's like, talks about how she doesn't understand how she was able to escape and survive when her sisters weren't.
I hate this word, but resiliency is so fucking accurate here.
Oh, hell yeah. That's like one resilient ass lady. Yeah.
It sounds like chance, too, that like yeah. it just so happens that her energy was focused in. And maybe it's a question of like those girls were maturing faster and more attractive.
That's yeah. And that's honestly what it seems like is like time was just not on their side. And in her case, it was, which is really unfortunate.
And I'm sure it takes a lot of fucking energy to be that hateful and terrible to kids. Bodies and all that stuff.
Seriously.
So I'm sure it was just a matter of like maybe she didn't even have enough energy to get to her as much, but I'm sure she did, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
especially all that. Yeah. Oh my god.
Well, and like especially given the fact that a lot of people who are in these situations, they're afraid to leave because they don't know what else is out there.
Oh yeah.
So like they're brave. Like at least this is the one thing I know. So like there's an added layer there. She's like it doesn't matter. It's better than this.
Yeah, and I think what she saw was, like, if I don't leave, I'm next.
Yeah.
So,
fucking kudos to her. I wish I could remove her survivor's guilt, because it's like, this was not your fault.
None of this. Your mom's a piece of fucking dog shit. Like
nobody would have survived, or could survive that.
No.
And be all right.
They directed her to the California County Police Department, who finally took her claim seriously and began an investigation.
Oh, my God. I want to punch all of them
what
in the face.
What do you mean?
After, what, 20 years of her trying to come to you?
Just like five. But still.
Oh. For some reason, I thought it was like 10
regardless.
At least.
Still. Terry shares the details of her sister's deaths, and investigators link the two Jane Does to the case. Which, like, you could have done that five years ago. William Knorr was arrested in November 1993 for his involvement. Robert Jr. was already serving time for that murder in Vegas and was charged for his involvement in his sister's deaths as well.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, on November 10th, 1993, authorities tracked down Teresa Knorr in Utah. She was working as a caregiver for an 86-year-old woman.
Oh, my God.
Poor woman.
Was she being abused?
Nope.
What Whoa. The fuck?
What?
Even like the family who employed her were like, we would have never known. Like
what?
We had no idea.
What the
she
fuck?
Was such a good caretaker for my mom.
And yet you can't even take care of your own goddamn kids.
Or not kill
not
them.
Jealous of an 86-year-old woman.
Oh my god.
That's really strange, you guys.
Just 5 days later, Teresa was convicted and charged with two counts, each of conspiracy to commit murder, murder, and murder by torture. This was so quick because she agreed to a plea deal after discovering that Robert Jr. planned to testify against her if she didn't.
So there's way more that we don't even know.
Yeah. She accepted this deal as long as the prosecution didn't seek the death penalty. In 1995, Teresa Knorr was sentenced to a double life double sentence of life in prison, but she's eligible for parole in 2027.
Why?
No.
Why?
No. Absolutely not.
Anyway, how could you even want to live like that with that kind of consciousness on your shoulders? Like, the fact that she got to survive, could you imagine how hard her daughter was working to survive after she escaped that place? And how she is managing to survive now, and this woman's like, don't kill me. Fuck you, Teresa Knorr.
Yeah, seriously. Fuck this lady, okay? All charges against Robert Jr. were dropped since he had testified, except for an accessory after the fact charge, which added 3 years to his already 16-year sentence.
Do you agree with that?
What?
The
hell no.
Accessory after the fact charge?
Hell no. They were manipulated into that shit. It's not fair at all.
The
That's messed up, dude.
William he had to complete. William completed court-ordered therapy and probation. They gave him therapy instead.
Thank God.
But I think they gave Robert Jr. like actual prison time because he was already like a was already a felon.
Yeah, he was getting in. But that also is like
I agree. It's still fucked up. It's not fair at all. But I think that's the reason for it.
Yeah,
it's just easier to do that.
If we went to every felon and was like, "Were you fucked up from a fucked up home?" Everyone would be like, "Yeah,
yes, yes, I was." Yeah, exactly. Because of Teresa's brutal ways, police reopened her sister's case. Rosemary Norris was murdered in 1983 by strangulation. Police found that Teresa was not involved in her death. But I thought it was interesting that they were like, maybe
she killed her sister too.
Yeah. Terry is the only child I have updates about. She lived out the rest of her life in Sandy, Utah. She had two marriages and unfortunately died of heart failure in 2011.
No.
Terry was the only surviving daughter of Teresa Norris. Without a doubt, would have been next on Teresa's list.
Wow. How old was she when she died?
I don't know. She was born in 1970, so let me do some math.
Okay.
Let me do the math.
Wow.
44?
41. Yeah. Damn, that's pretty young.
Well, there's actually some research, too, that the adverse childhood experiences.
Mm-hmm. You have a higher risk of heart disease and heart failure.
Yep. If you've experienced
blood pressure.
Certain traumatic instances in your childhood.
Yeah. Wow. It really messes up your medical. So, like, that's why some people have. I imagine IBS is a part of it.
Wow.
I think stomach.
You have lots of gut problems if you're having mental health issues, too.
Fibromyalgia.
Yeah. You know, that's entirely rooted in trauma.
Trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
But I will say one thing about that, though. I wouldn't recommend going to look up and do the adverse childhood experiences unless you were with someone who is trained to do that, because it brings up a lot of heavy shit that takes
it's
a
like
lot
a
to unpack, so don't do it alone.
Yeah, it's like a form we use professionally. Yeah. So, not a toy?
Yeah.
Not a, like, a BuzzFeed quiz?
No, not at all. And especially if you're not ready to,
yeah,
to unpack that, my friend. Yeah. So, look up what it is and the research behind it. Don't take it unless you're prepared. But basically, I just hope this fucking steaming pile of garbage doesn't get parole because, like, you don't deserve it.
No.
You don't deserve it.
No, absolutely not.
And even if that's not enough, look at her fucking kids' lives. Like, what? Even just hearing that was hard for 1 hour, maybe.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to think someone's actually going through that every day of their damn lives is disgusting.
Yeah. It's a fucked up case, but I think it's an important one.
Yeah.
But fuck that lady.
You say if you hear something, say something, goddammit.
Please. Yes.
I'm going to how many times these kids fell through people's fingertips.
Believe survivors. I don't know how much louder and stronger I can say
survivors.
That. Believe survivors. Okay? And if you want some fucking stats about that shit, I will bust it out. If you want to argue about this, I will argue all day.
Some of you may
it's
think
fine.
That's a reasonable concept, but no, I've heard and sat and talked to people who are like, but why didn't they just leave? Why didn't
that's
they just say
works.
Anything? Because fuck you, that's why.
Yeah, seriously. So if you want to discuss this case with us, come check us out on Instagram, Not a Boogeyman. Give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already.
We might have some fun ways for you to interact with us on our Patreon. So if you want to go sign up for that, that'd be cool.
Yeah, linked in the description. And if you have any fun, like, listener stories, we still haven't gotten any. I'm disappointed.
Come on, send us some ideas.
Yeah.
We know you're out there. We see the numbers.
Hell yeah.
We know you're there.
You got ghost stories?
Shout out.
Did your, like,
ghost stories.
Did your dad, like, almost get in a car with a murderer? Like, I want to know.
Did you see a UFO?
Tell me
I also want to know.
I want to just create, like, an audio version of those, like, top 5 creepy stories.
Yes.
Because I want it to be real life stories, because I have so many, and I want to know I'm not crazy.
Yes.
Yes.
Send them to us at our email, notamonsternotaboogeyman@gmail.com. Also, we got another Patreon. So, Patreon shout out, Miranda Carlson. Thank you. We appreciate the support. Seriously, come join our Patreon. It's a lot of fun. Early access and cool episodes every month. We're hoping to do some live streams and stuff soon, but we need more of you guys to come hang out. So once we get more people to come hang out, we'll start doing more stuff.
We'll become internet hobos.
Woo! Anyway,
sweet.
Come back next week. Spooky-ooky.
Cool. Hell yes.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.